Welcome back to another episode of the OT for Life podcast. If this is your first episode, welcome, and I'm glad that you're here. And if you're a returning listener, thanks for being here, and I really appreciate your support. This week, we're right in the middle of the student series, and I've got the third episode of the OTA fieldwork for you with our students Chantal Sendall and EJ Ikepisi. If you missed the first two episodes, go back and check out episode 43 and 44 and see how the students started their journey. Today's episode jumps in with the girls having just completed their midterm evaluations. We reflect on what has happened in the past few weeks of fieldwork and also discuss what's to come in the final weeks. After today's episode, we have one more with the girls to wrap up their second level two fieldwork experience. And after that, I've got another interview for you with a fantastic guest discussing life after fieldwork. The girls are over halfway done with their fieldwork placement, so let's bring them on and see what's going on now.
If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life.
Well, here we are, just finished week six and going into week seven.
10 more days.
But who's counting?
No one.
I was totally about to say, and you have 2 weeks. You're like, 10 days. So I have to ask, how does it feel right now?
Good.
I don't know. Like, it's weird because so for my first field work, I felt like at the 7 week mark is where I felt most confident. Like I had a routine going and everything. And it's not that I don't feel confident right now at the 7 week mark, but it's just more of I want this to be over feeling in comparison to my last field work. Like my last field work at the 7 week mark, I was confident, but and I also wish I had more time. But now, no, I'm just ready for it to be over. And I don't know if that's like a anxious, like just ready to graduate type of thing, or I don't know.
For me, I feel like similar at my first field work, I was doing more and I was more independent and was more comfortable at week seven than I am now at this placement.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to kind of reflect a little bit on what you guys have shared in some of the other episodes. And EJ, kind of thinking about what you said, I think because your last placement, you knew that you had another rotation coming up for both of you guys. So I wonder if that was like, all right, like push through. We have this one, we have the next one. And now you guys are just getting close to the end, like the total end. And so I wonder if that's playing a role into just being like, all right, I'm ready to be done. I want to go just graduate and like move on.
Yeah.
Start working.
Yeah. It could have to do with the setting too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It definitely
could be different.
Interesting. All right. Since the last time that we talked, you guys have had the midterm, and I'd love to just kind of dig a little bit deeper about how that felt for you guys and what it kind of looked like going through it. And also, because you guys have already done it once and like had another midterm evaluation, if there were any differences between your two settings. Just to kind of give a picture for somebody that hasn't gone through a midterm evaluation before.
I was definitely calmer getting to this midterm than the first one. I didn't know what to expect, so I was really nervous. This one, I think that I knew what it was going to be. It sounds silly, but they tell you not to give fours. So I kind of felt like I knew what to expect, and it was that.
Did you feel like, at least for the first midterm of your first rotation, did you go into it thinking that you would be getting fours?
No.
Okay.
I didn't even really look at the form or know what was coming up and like what the comments would be with the first one. So it was nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. But with the second one, I already knew what the comments were going to be and like what the areas were, and it was already familiar.
Got it. Yeah. And I think we should point out, like when we're talking about fours and whatnot, that typically you're going to be graded or scored on a scale of 1 to 4. And fours are not very common at midterm, nor are they actually very common at final either. That, like, if you're getting fours, that means that you are in the top, I think they say 5% of all students. So a score of a four is like really, really good. Threes are considered great. Like, you're doing just fine. So yeah, I don't want anyone to get stressed out if they're not getting fours either, because they're not typically given out.
Yeah, I don't know, because I think that's just like the stressful part of it. If you're like used to just seeing your grade on a number scale, I think if you get all threes, which like is pretty good, your number still ends up being in like the 70s. So it makes like on paper, it doesn't seem like you did that well. Like, because in order for you to get like close to 100, you have to have like majority fours, and nobody really does. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did last time, but this time, like, I'm not expecting that. So like, I don't know if I like how it's calculated.
Well, I think, too, it's difficult because everyone does it a different way. So all of our fieldwork educators are so different.
Yeah, that was another thing for me, because I'm at, like, so many different sites. Like, I have kind of, like, 5 different fieldwork educators, technically, but really I only have one that's responsible for the paperwork and everything. So I guess she got input from, like, everybody else that I was working with, but still, she was the only one that filled out the evaluation, and I felt kind of weird about that because I actually don't spend that much time with her. Mm-hmm. But I mean, she still said good things. So
do you feel like that there might have been some like discrepancies, or maybe some of the comments that she was saying you felt like you were already doing, or anything like that?
I don't know, not really. Well, there was like one, I think she said I needed improvement on like using evidence-based practice, and I just felt, I don't know, not kind of jaded, but I'm like, she doesn't even watch me do my group, so how does she know? Like, how do you know? But at the same time, yeah, like, I'm just doing a lot of what I see everyone else do. So if I'm not using evidence-based practice, then I guess neither are everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Definitely. I feel yeah. like, and I feel like that's very site-specific, where some sites are really big onto incorporating evidence and using evidence, and other sites, it's just not as a big of deal. And so, yeah, I can see where you're like, well, I'm trying, and
yeah,
like I have it for maybe some of my backing and all of that, but you're not just like pulling out a research article in the middle yeah. of your treatment session.
Yeah, especially in that kind of setting, like mental right. health, I feel like, I don't know, it's just different. But overall, I'm okay with it.
I have been surprised, and like with the therapeutic use of self getting it too, I see that was probably the biggest surprise to me.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure you didn't get it too, but I did from my last one too. And obviously they were higher at the end, but it's like what we're known for. So I feel like when they tell our fieldwork educators not to score above a certain number, it's hard because what if you are doing that? You know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like they discourage them from doing that.
Right. And I can see where that can be kind of frustrating or potentially like upsetting for a student. And I think what I always try to convey to my students is that if I am scoring, of course, if I'm scoring a one, that means there is definite improvement that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. But especially at midterm, if I'm giving you a two, that means you guys are right where you need to be. And there's still room to grow because you're at midterm and you're not expected to be at the final level. You're not expected to be at entry level yet within that practice setting. But a right. two means you're right where you need to be and continue doing what you're doing and continue to grow. And then, you know, it's expected that you will get up to a three or potentially a four by final. But I think a lot of times the student can interpret that of, well, I want to be a three. I want to be good. I want to be better. I want to be a four. But it's really just having that understanding of you're right where you need to be and you don't have to worry right. about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just a little off-putting when you're like, wait, you're saying I'm doing all of this really, really well, but then I have a two. So
yeah. Well, and I think too, it probably, because in school, you can always get up to that max amount of points. And so when you're not there, you feel like you didn't do something right or you could have done something mm-hmm. differently. But then when you get into field work, it's more of this like satisfactory or unsatisfactory performance. And so you just have to, you just have to pass. You don't have to get 100%. You just have to get above a certain number in order to pass the fieldwork. So it's a slight difference in how you see it and how you kind of, how you approach it, I guess.
Well, that makes a lot more sense. I wish someone would have explained that to me that way before. Did you know that, EJ, or no?
I mean, I kind of knew, but still at the same time, like, I'm a real numbers-based person. Like, I like right. to be over a certain threshold. And so, like, not being there is kind of not disheartening, but it's just like, I don't know. I don't like it.
Right. Well, yeah, especially since we have to be above a certain grade all the time anyways. So,
yeah. So I guess passing for field work is a 70, but like in our class, that wouldn't be passing. So I just, I don't know. It's confusing in that way.
So my two thoughts on this kind of topic right here is A, keep in mind that when you guys start practicing, no supervisor or boss or anything like that is ever going to ask you, well, what did you score on your midterm of your level two fieldworks? Even the finals, like that's never going to be a question as long as you pass it. And I think especially for the midterm evaluations, one of the biggest reasons that they do it, and again, this is my opinion on the subject, is really to identify the students that are struggling and the specific areas that they're struggling in, because then the site would actually have to reach out to the school and say, hey, this student is really struggling. They're not showing a passing score for the midterm right now. These are their areas, to then see if the school can get involved and then kind of put some things in place to try to help that student along. And so I can see when you want to have higher numbers, but as long as you're in that passing range is perfectly fine. And really it's more looking at or more trying to find out if there are issues with a student. It's reason for the site to then have to contact the school.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Anything else about the midterm?
Okay. So I don't know. It was kind of different. Like for my first midterm, like, my supervisor filled it out and then like we met and like discussed it. Like she didn't fill it out like as she was going through it with me. Like she did it at home over the weekend and then we talked about it when she got back. And then for this one, because I don't see my fieldwork educator that often, like we also didn't have time to sit and do it. And she just completed it and like emailed it to me so I could look it over. And I looked it over and just told her thanks and that was it. Like we didn't really talk about it.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Do you feel like you had things to say? Like, do you wish that you would have been able to kind of sit down and discuss things with her? Or do you feel like it was a pretty good representation for you and it was good enough?
I think it was good enough, especially, I don't know, at this point, I just, as long as I pass, like, I don't really care about the details. So, yeah. I mean, if she had, like, a lot of, like, negative things to say, I probably would have wanted to sit down with her, but it was okay for me because it was like above passing and she said good thing. So,
okay.
It's like, I don't know what I would have had to say to her.
Okay. Yeah. There was nothing that you wanted to either ask for like accommodations or ask for more feedback. Like it wasn't that you needed to ask her anything. So it sounds like it was okay. But I can imagine that if you were kind of in a situation where you wanted to have that FaceTime with your supervisor, it might have been rough to just get it through an email and then be like, okay, I guess I can't tell you what I was thinking about. Okay. Very interesting. I haven't heard it done that way before. So interesting to hear that side.
Mine, we sat down and went over it. We made time. I think it was after our weekend. I mean, it was already done. She had filled it out and I had to send in the copy of it. But she just went through it and read the comments and elaborated on what she wrote in the comments. And it was pretty relaxed. And it was just basically her telling me what my grade was.
Did you get any sort of like opportunity for you to discuss how you felt and share your experience so far?
Yeah, but I didn't. I didn't elaborate on anything or have anything really to say.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think, like, I guess the reason that I asked that question is because I'm, like, myself as a supervisor, I'm really big on the student's own self-reflection. And so it's one thing for me to sit there and be like, well, you guys did really good at this and really good at this, and you need improvement in this area and that area. But I always like my students to try to identify those things in themselves, because the self-reflection and the self-awareness piece is huge. And it's so important that the students start to know where they're at and understand that. So I think it was just more of a curiosity question for me to see if you guys were allowed that opportunity, or if you just kind of took that time to do your own self-reflection but didn't really talk to your supervisor about it.
So yeah, because we had like a self-reflection like assignment. It was like a form that we filled out, but we just sent it to like our fieldwork coordinator and like another instructor, but not, I don't think our actual fieldwork educators got to see it, but it was kind of like our midterm evaluation of like the site and our own performance, which like I had mentioned in that one, like about how I don't really communicate that much with my fieldwork educator. And then my fieldwork coordinator, she reached out and said, like, do I need any more support, or did I want them to reach out to her? And I'm like, no, I'm okay. But it was just a comment that we don't have a lot of communication.
Okay.
So I want to add, we do self-reflection at the end of every single week. So we already had done that for that week, and this was just added on top of that. EJ, you know, like the self-reflections that we do at the end of the week.
Oh, yeah, the weekly reflections. But our fieldwork educators don't see that.
No, I sit down with my fieldwork educator at the end of the week and do it. Yeah, she had a copy of it, and she was like, I really like doing this. So we sit down and go over it.
Got it. So it was something that had already been done and didn't actually have to be done during the midterm.
Right, because we do it every week. So we're already kind of caught up on, like, what I think my strengths are, improvement, you know, like the self-reflection piece of the week.
Did you do that for your last one too? Like meet with your fieldwork educator and fill it out?
No, this is, she's the one who wanted to sit down and fill it out. Which, yeah, I was like, okay. Because we have to do it at the end of the week anyways. And it kind of helps to have another person's input. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying the same thing every week. But no, we did sit down at the end of every week and talk, but not about like the self-reflection itself.
So just for clarification, you guys have to do this weekly for your school requirement.
Yeah.
But then Chantal, you're actually doing it with your fieldwork educator.
Correct.
Okay. Uh-huh. Now I get it, because I was like, hold on a second, they're missing a big piece, but it was already covered.
I feel like that would be cool to like sit down with your fieldwork educator and actually fill out that sheet, because it's a pretty like generic form. It's like, what were your strengths this week? What were your weaknesses? Upcoming assignments and like a goal for the next week. But it can kind of get like repetitive since it is the same questions. And if you don't have like a lot of new things going on, then it feels like you're writing the same thing every week. But I also think like that would be good. Like I never thought, I don't know if my fieldwork educator has the time to like go through that sheet with me, but like it would be cool just to go through it with her to see like what I think and what she thinks. But at the same time, like we don't interact that often and we don't see each other. So it's like she doesn't really have a way to like give me feedback on something she didn't see.
But maybe it could even be one of the other therapists that you're with.
Oh, yeah, that could be too.
Right, because it would be beneficial to you to have another set of eyes that sees things that maybe you don't necessarily see in yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
It's something, I don't know who gave it to her, but she had it, and I'm fine with her doing it. And I think maybe more people should do it with their fieldwork educators.
Yeah, I was thinking like maybe they could make that a requirement, but I don't know if people really have the time to do that.
Right. It might be difficult for some.
Yeah, I love that you guys just brought that up, because I think some schools require you to do it. I think some sites require you to do it, but not all of them. And so specifically, I mean, I think this would be good across the board for every student to do, even if they can't go over it with their supervisor. But, you know, once a week, just taking the time to reflect, think about what's going on, think about the challenges, think about their strengths, because I think it's very easy to kind of get lost in the weeds of, oh my gosh, I don't know everything, and then kind of forget how far you've come and everything that you've learned. Yeah, like I think that's actually a really good piece of advice for other students that could potentially be starting fieldwork soon or in the future, to give them that time to have that self-reflection and to develop the self-awareness skills that is so necessary as a therapist.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, me too. But at the same time, it just feels like, I don't know, extra work.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, especially if other people don't have to complete extra work on top of field work.
But, you know, it doesn't have to take a ton of time. Like, just spending a couple minutes and just jotting down your thoughts. I don't know. If you would have told me this as a student, I probably would have been like, yeah, that's more work. I'm not going to do it. But now as a supervisor, I'm like, ooh, I see the benefit of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and maybe not every week, maybe every 2 weeks, like something like that, just to see the growth, I think, would be the most beneficial part. And to see how far you've come throughout the, you know, 8 weeks as an OTA student or the 12 weeks as an OT student, and really seeing where you start and seeing where you end up.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe we'll look back on this and really appreciate the weekly self-reflection.
When you guys start taking students of your own, you're going to make them do it.
Maybe.
So has there been any changes? Because I know the last recording, we talked about what your schedule was looking like and your caseload and the different groups that you guys were running or about to be running, and documentation and supervision. Have there been any changes in the last couple weeks as far as maybe your responsibilities and what your kind of your day-to-day professional life looks like?
Mine's pretty much the same. I feel like mine is not typical because I'm only like an inpatient for those 2 days, and then I'm floating through like the community sites. And then like last week I had went with one of my friends who is like, she graduated last year, but now she works for an agency that like partners with the hospital that I'm at. So I got to go with her and like shadow to see what she does last week. And I'm going to be with her again this Tuesday. So it's different than if you're at the same site, like day to day. But for the 2 days that I am an inpatient, like, because my fieldwork educator has 3 students right now. They made out a schedule for all of the 3 students so we can see like what everybody's group is going to be. One of the days I like co-lead an OT group with one of the other OT students. And then I have one group that I do on my own. And then Friday, it's the same thing, like co-lead a group and then have a group of my own.
Now, did the other students, did you guys all start at the same time, or are you at different levels throughout the rotation?
Yeah, we're at different levels. One of the girls, she started, I think, right at midterm.
Okay.
So like I had been there for 4 weeks and then she started, and then the other guy was there before me.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So it's kind of like we're at different stages, but.
Yeah, but you guys can kind of collaborate together, learn from each other.
I'll be done in 2 weeks and both of the OT students will still be there because obviously they go longer. Mm-hmm. I like having other students there though, like just to bounce ideas off of. And it feels like, I don't know, less formal, or like you can just relate to students on a different level. So it's good to have like that support.
I completely agree. I think that there is a different layer of learning that happens when it's 2 students that are learning together, as opposed to just a fieldwork educator and a student. Because I do both, where I'll take 1 student or I'll take 2 students at a time. And when I started taking 2 students at a time, I just noticed this complete shift in like learning and understanding and collaboration between the 2 students and learning from each other. And it was just like this beautiful dynamic that when it's just 1 student, it's not that it's like bad per se, it's just, it's different because it's just you going through it and that's it.
Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know, if it was just me, I feel like, I don't want to use the word bug, but I just feel like I'd like being able to go to another student versus having to go to a supervisor. Like, we can work it out together, or like before we go to the supervisor, I have another resource. So it doesn't feel like I'm bugging her or like always having to like be up under her for something, because I have like 2 other people that I can go to first.
Right. And I'm sure, I don't know if you're this way, but I'm sure some students, they might not ask all of their questions if they can only ask their supervisor.
Yeah.
But if it's another student, like,
yeah, they might, more comfortable.
Yeah. Like, they might think that the question is silly, that like their supervisor might be like, why are you asking me this question?
Mm-hmm.
But they might feel, yeah, more comfortable or a little bit, I don't know, a little bit more, a little easier to say it to another student. And then you guys can kind of hash it out and come to an agreement or disagreement about what the answer is. Yeah. Oh, I love having multiple students at a time, because I think there's, again, there's just this different, there's a difference, and it's like a really cool, I can't even explain it. It's just a really cool, like, learning opportunity for the students, but then also as a supervisor getting to watch that happen and watch it as it takes place, like in action. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then for the OT students, it's kind of like a little bit of a glimpse on like supervising a COTA.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like practice supervision for them as OT students to supervise a COTA.
Exactly. And really for both of you guys to advocate what your unique roles are, because some students might not get that in their rotations. And then all of a sudden they're working and maybe they're an OT student that's never supervised or never worked with a COTA before, and all of a sudden they have to. And so going through that as a student and being able to kind of advocate of like, this is what I can do, this is what I should be doing in this instance,
mm-hmm.
I think that is like hugely beneficial for students to go through.
Yeah. And then like at one of my sites, it's like the outpatient, like a community residence. So it's like a step down from the hospital, but they're a midway point between actually being in like your own apartment. So kind of like a group home-ish kind of thing. But we do different groups. So like we'll have, say, a cooking group or whatever. And then after that's done, like our fieldwork educator will have us both write our notes and then like compare. And it's just interesting just to see, like, sometimes she'll pick up on things that I didn't pick up on, or like we'll highlight different things. Like she'll focus on one thing more than I do, or I'll focus on more, something that she didn't really focus on. So it's just like interesting to get like a different perspective and see like how other people write their notes and what she would put in and what I would put in. I just like that experience of just seeing what other people think.
Yes. Yeah. And do you feel like after you work with a group and you go through the notes together, the next time, do you feel like you start to incorporate some of the things that the other student was pulling out in that session that you guys had talked about the note already?
Sometimes, but like I think I had a little bit of an advantage because I had already been doing the groups with him. So like my note, like he had already seen, pretty much he already showed me how he likes his notes written, like the fieldwork educator. Uh-huh. So then my notes were like kind of replicating his style, because I already know like that's what he wants to see. Mm-hmm. So the second time I had, it was like my second note, but it was her first note. My note had a lot more of what the fieldwork educator was looking for, only because I already knew how he likes his notes.
Mm-hmm. So then it was almost like you were helping that other student.
Yeah.
Because you had already gone through it.
Yeah.
I think that's cool, because I'm sure with other students, like you've picked up on things from them and you've learned from them. But then in this situation that you just shared with us, they were learning from you specifically. So just, yeah, it's cool. I don't know. I like it. I'm a big fan of having multiple students. And also, I think it's cool to have students that start at different times. So they're not just all going through at the exact same time. You have some that have been there. Because I think last time you mentioned there was a student who you had been with for a couple of weeks. And then that student had just finished. And so you weren't quite sure what it was going to look like going forward.
I think I was with her for like 2 or 3 weeks. And she was really helpful because it was like towards the end of her rotation. Like she was pretty solid in knowing, like she had a routine and she knew everyone. And she just, it was really good. She was able to help me because she was towards the end. She had a good grasp on the site already.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of miss her though.
Do you?
She was so good.
Well, and I think that's actually an interesting thing that you just brought up, because each student's going to be slightly different. And it's so, like, this is such an easily relatable topic to not just students, but when you are working in a facility with multiple other therapists and professionals, that there's always going to be different people that are going to like kind of be coming and going and learning to be able to work with a variety of different people.
That's why I like going to different sites and having different supervisors, because they definitely are all different in their approach and their style, but it just helps me see things from different perspectives and, you know, get ideas and tips from, you know, the way each person treats.
Yeah. So Chantal, I wanted to ask you, have there been any changes in terms of your schedule or what your supervision looks like, maybe your caseload, anything like that since the last time that we've talked?
So my schedule is maybe a little bit busier because I've been going to more groups with other therapists other than my fieldwork educator. My supervision is the same, and it probably will be the same just because of the setting. No one will ever be running a group by themselves. There's always at least two OT, like an OT or an OTA in the groups. So I'll always have at least one or two people with me. And documentation has been more, I would say. It's a hospital, so it depends how many people we have.
Okay. So from what both of you guys are saying, it doesn't sound like there's been too many changes. Do you guys feel like your caseload and your schedule and kind of your responsibilities and expectations, that everything is still pretty manageable? Or are you guys kind of feeling the crunch and feeling stressed with a lot of stuff that you have to get done?
I'm definitely feeling stressed. I feel like I should be doing more at this point, because I'm comparing it to my past field work. And I feel like I was more independent at this stage, whereas right now I don't feel as independent in running groups. And I'm still really nervous doing it. So I'm a little disappointed in myself of where I am right now.
I want to reflect on that a little bit, Chantal. Like, what do you feel like either that you need to do, or like, what is something that could help you in the last 2 weeks either get more comfortable or feel like you are at the level that you want yourself to be?
I think it's just really difficult for me to stand up in front of a group of people. And that's my own like personal issue and problem. I'm trying to get over it, but I'm not going to get over it in the short amount of time that we're there. So I just feel like I should be doing more, but I feel like I'm too nervous. Not because of the setting, but just because I'm scared of getting up in front of a group of people. I think I said before, I'm with adolescents and they're a tough crowd. So,
oh yeah,
it's difficult. Like, I get along easier or can get up in front of the adults, I think, easier, but the adolescents, I'm still, and that's who I have to run groups with. So I don't know. I think that I just need to, I've been trying to run their groups that they already have in place. And so like, I'm trying to memorize things that aren't mine. So when I am standing in front of the group and I make a mistake, it like spirals, you know, like I get like really nervous. So I think if I write my own group, like what I want to accomplish and what I want to say and what the group is, then it might be a little bit easier, because it's not like reading somebody else's stuff.
So it sounds like there's kind of two factors. And the first one that you mentioned is your comfort level or your stress level of speaking in front of a group. And I get it. I totally get it. Growing up, I was really shy. I hated public speaking, like even to this day, like I still get really nervous when I have to like talk in front of a group. So I totally understand where you're coming from. I feel like, and well, actually, I should say also having to do it with adolescents, like that is not an easy crowd to please and to be in front of.
Yeah.
They can be ruthless. Do you feel like there is at least one person within that group, like one adolescent within that group, that you connect with really well?
So sometimes, yes, but because it's a hospital, people aren't there very long because they want to, you know, they want to not have people staying in the hospital for a long time. So we just had like everyone leave pretty much. And now we have new people. And obviously with mental health, it's a little delicate at times because you might connect with them one day and then the next day you do not. You know, or they had a bad visit or they got bad news about they're not going home when they think they are. So there's so many factors that play into it. Like, I could be getting along great with one of the kids one day and then the next day I'm not. Or, you know, they're different. And that, yeah. I mean, that's just adolescence in general. But it's even more difficult in the setting that we're in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could definitely see that. And, you know, maybe, like, I'm trying to give you a piece of advice. Something to take with you. I know there's only 2 weeks left. But, like, maybe it's even worthwhile, like, practicing what you're going to say outside of the group. I mean, I know time... there's not a lot of time, but just kind of running through what you think is going to happen and what you think you'd like to say before you actually do it. I don't know. It's a tough predicament, a tough kind of placement to be put in. And then to compound that with not really running groups, activities or whatever that you've set up, right? You're kind of having to conform to what other people are doing. And that's tough. That's not easy. So you have a lot of things kind of working not in your favor in this situation.
I think too, like even with making my own groups, it's still nerve-wracking because I don't know all of the things that, I don't know. It's just difficult. I'm trying. I'm trying to get better. I have 2 weeks left. I need to get better or at least feel better of where I am.
Yeah. I think that's the important thing to note here is that just to try to feel a little bit more comfortable and a little more confident in it. Like, of course, you're not going to learn everything that you need to know in these 8 weeks and you're not going to be the strongest. I think back of when I finished my fieldworks, like I was nowhere near where I am today. So, but it's more just kind of having that recognition of trying to get to a good place where you're like, okay, like, I got enough of it and I'm comfortable where I'm at.
Yeah.
I can definitely relate to Chantal. Like at this point, I've just been running my own groups, doing what I want to do, but they have like these syllabi that they kind of follow. So I just do a group, like I look at the syllabus before and make sure it's like, you know, what I'm doing does relate to the syllabus, but it's not like following someone's specific layout of like the group that they designed, if that makes sense. Like I started putting my own spin on it, but when I was trying to follow their groups, it was kind of difficult because it's like that's not me. And I feel like every therapist has like their own style, so like they run the group based on the way they would do it, but then it's hard to do that when like that's not how you would do it. So I definitely, when I was able to, you know, do it myself, it definitely was easier than trying to follow what they were doing.
Yeah, and I can totally relate as well to what you guys are talking about. And I'll share a story that happened with one of my students. And we had just finished a treatment session with a client, and we were just like sitting there and debriefing and talking about it. And the student was telling me like how it went. And I know there was a portion of time where that student was struggling. And I saw it, but I wanted them to kind of go through it and try to figure out what to do in that situation. And so as we were driving and we were talking about it, the student made a comment to me and was like, you know, I was sitting there and all I kept thinking about is what would Sarah do in this situation? And I stopped the student right there. And I'm like, you know what? That is not what you should be thinking about. You should be thinking about what you, the student, should be doing in that situation. And really having that kind of shift of mindset that just because your supervisor or the educator or the therapist that you're with does it one way doesn't mean that if you have something different and you want to do it that different way, it doesn't mean that it's wrong. And I can see if like you're always having to kind of constantly conform to what other people are doing, it can be difficult, especially if they are not the same energy or maybe have the same interests or if there's just differences in reading styles. And so when you get that kind of autonomy to be able to do it yourself, all of a sudden you can kind of like come into your own a little bit and get more animated and get more excited because it's something that you created, you designed, and now you're implementing within the session.
Yeah, that's how it was for my last one too. In the beginning, like I was kind of just following what I saw her do and like her routine, especially because, you know, those were her patients that a lot of them she had for a while. So they were used to that. It's a little bit different in mental health because a lot of them are like in and out, and even some of the groups won't be the same. So they may be in your group 1 week, but not the next. I think it's also that like it's hard to break out of that habit of following what your supervisor does, because at the end of the day, you just want to get like they're grading you. So it's and they're also teaching you. So I don't know, you kind of instinctively want to do exactly what they're doing.
They're the only thing that we see. Like,
that's who's grading you, and that's also who's training you.
Completely. Some supervisors, and I kind of say this from experience when I was a student, they like things done their way, and they like don't always see when a student does something that's not what they do. They think it's wrong. And that's not always the case, but it's kind of one of those things that you have to navigate and you have to work through. And yeah, just start to kind of understand. And it's one of those things you just have to deal with as a student, unfortunately. I think we'll kind of wrap up. There's 2 weeks left, which is crazy. That's absolutely crazy to say.
Yeah, this went by super fast.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. 10 more days.
Where? 10 more days. Yes. So where are your heads going into these last 2 weeks and beyond, I'll say? Like, what are you guys thinking?
I'm just thinking about, you know, finishing these last 2 weeks. Then, like, we've already started thinking about the exam, thinking about getting a job, debating, like, do we want to get a temporary license? Do we just want to wait until we pass our boards? I mean, I guess we have a little bit because our last, like, we have 2 more weeks and we have, like, 1 more class the week after we wrap up our field work. And then, but it's, like, 2 more weeks in between that and graduation. So at least we will have a little bit of time to, like, unwind and reflect. But it's kind of like we still don't really get a true break because, you know, we have boards. We have to all this final paperwork and everything else that needs to be done. But I'll be glad when at least field work is squared away, then we can focus on the other stuff.
I agree.
But it sounds like the preparation for graduation and the board exam and finding a job and all that good stuff is already kind of creeping its way into your headspace and into what you guys are thinking about, even though field work isn't even over yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy because, like, everything is so expensive, too. Like,
yeah.
From prep classes to, like, material to the actual boards, our license. And it's like, we've been working for free for 4 months. So it's like, where do we get this money for all this other stuff that's coming up?
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point that you just brought up, too. Yeah, like, I mean, you guys, and even when you're in school, like, I'm sure that some students are working, but maybe aren't able to work at full capacity or something like that. So the monetary value of the everything that you guys have been going through has probably put some stress and had some influence over kind of your life and stuff that you're dealing with as well.
Yeah.
Like for me, a lot.
For the majority of the program, like I worked full time. So it's like I always had money, even though, you know, I spent it. But now, like for the past 4 months, I've just been working like part-time / per diem. So it's like my hours aren't predictable and it's definitely like a big change from full-time money. So I'm dealing with that. And then I'll think of like all the other expenses, you know, life expenses in addition to the school expenses, but we'll get through it. Like I'm debating, do I want to get like a regular non-OT full-time job like over the summer to like pay for all of this? Like, I don't know.
Like, while you're studying?
Yeah, like, while I'm studying. But then I also don't want to, like, I want to still have time to study, but then I don't.
Right.
I don't want to, it's, I don't know. Like, I'm reading on Facebook, and some people are like, I study for 3 months straight from 9 to 5, and I don't think I have that in me.
I have not worked while we have been going through this. And it, like you said, it has been really stressful. Even like EJ, you've worked and it's been stressful. It's been stressful not working. Mm-hmm. It's just so much pressure, I think, to pass, like even more so now.
Chantel, I have a question. I don't know. Like, do you feel, because I really didn't have like any expectations of like being offered a job for my fieldwork site, but yeah, now like seeing a lot of people in our class had that opportunity, like, do you feel some kind of way about that?
I do.
Okay.
I find it really disheartening because it makes me wonder, like, why haven't I been offered anything? I think that probably comes into the stress of this placement too. My last placement, there was no opportunity for me to work there. So that was disheartening in itself because they sent me to a place that there was no opportunity to, but I loved it. And it was really disheartening that I couldn't work there. Now it's stressful because, like, now I don't know where I'm going to fit in. And I don't think, I obviously am probably not going to get offered a job, about 99.9% sure. I'm scared to stand up in front of a group of people. So, yeah, it does, because we've worked really hard, and now I just don't know where my place is.
I'm actually glad that you guys brought that up, because I was a student that I did not get offered a job at either one of my level 2 fieldwork placements, but I also wasn't either expecting it or wasn't even thinking that that's where I wanted to be, because they were in like different areas and not really close to where I lived. So I guess I didn't really go into it thinking, yes, I'm hoping that I can get a job offer out of it. But I do remember a lot of my classmates getting job offers, and specifically after like their first one. And this would have happened a year and like before they graduated. And I was always like, man, like, am I missing out on something? Like, what's going on? And so it's hard, even though you don't want to compare yourself, like, it's hard when other people are getting job offers and you're not.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. And I guess I don't want either of you guys to get discouraged, or anybody else that's listening to this that is not or has not gotten a job offer from one of their level 2 placements. Like, it might just not be able to happen. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they wouldn't hire you if they could. So I don't know. Like, I feel like you guys are kind of like, you guys are down about it. And I guess I just don't want you guys to feel down about it.
I think that when you see other people getting offers, it's hard not to get down a little bit, because, I don't know, it'd be great for everyone to get a job offer. I think it just kind of stresses you out a little bit more of, what am I going to do when this is all over?
Right. Yeah. It adds to the stress stack.
Yeah.
And everything that you have to think about and get done and get through in the next couple weeks to months. And it doesn't alleviate anything. It is actually in addition to.
Yeah.
But I think it's something that a lot of students go through. I think it's kind of a normal thing, especially if you're not getting a job offer. So that's why I'm glad that you guys brought that up, because I think it is an important thing to discuss and kind of bring to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a post on one of the Facebook pages. I think it might have been like one of the exam prep Facebook pages. And someone had asked, like, how many of you got job offers? And like, if you did get a job offer, like, what did you do to like get it, kind of? Like, what led up to that? And I was just thinking, like, oh, I don't have any job offers. I mean, I kind of didn't expect it, though, because my first fieldwork site, it was home care, and you have to have like a year of experience. Like, they don't even hire you if you don't have a year of experience. And then now at my site now, there's only one other OTA working and there's no opening. So it's not like it's a reflection on me, but still, like, when you see people who have gotten job offers from like both of their fieldworks, or like already, you know, had a job lined up before their first one was even done, it's just like, you can't help but to compare and feel some type of way about that.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not a personal attack on you, but it's hard to not feel that way.
I feel like too, because I like EJ, it's the same. Like we want to work. We need to work. Like
seriously.
I have two small children and my husband has been carrying like this for a long time. I need to work and help pay some bills, you know, from all of this. So it is hard. It's disheartening, but at the same time, it's where you're at. And like, I don't think the place I'm at is even their fault, you know? So I guess just where you're placed and if they're hiring or not, or, you know, there's so many different factors that go into it.
Yeah. I think another thing was like, it would have been nice to, you know, get a job at some place you're familiar with versus like, you know, going into a brand new spot. Like for me and Chantal, well, Chantal, I don't know if you plan on working in mental health or a school, but 9 times out of 10, the jobs that we get are not going to be related to our fieldwork experience. So that's a little scary. Like, I'm pretty sure I won't be doing home care and I don't know if I'm going to be doing mental health. Like a lot of people from our program, their first job was at like a skilled nursing facility. And one of my friends who actually graduated, she works in mental health now. And she actually had her field work where Chantal had hers. And then she had another one that was kind of like emerging practice. But her first job, she got in a nursing home and like she didn't know what to expect. Like she didn't know how it was because she had never been in that setting and she kind of struggled there. So I think I'm also kind of worried about that. Like
working in a place,
you know, where we didn't have that experience.
Yeah, I love the experiences that I've had, but I really wish I had some hands-on FizDiz experience because now I feel like I don't know if I like I feel like it's use it or lose it. Like I'm scared that I don't know what to do in that setting because I haven't seen it or been around it, and just hope and pray that they have like someone who's going to tell you what to do and show you if you do go to work at a place like that.
That's also something I was thinking of.
Can I have 8 weeks field work, please, before I start the job?
No, seriously. Like, well, maybe, Sarah, you can give us some advice. Like, how do you say we've never had field work in, like, skilled nursing, which I don't really want to work in skilled nursing, but if I have to go there because that's
never say never.
Yeah, like, that's who's hiring. Like, how do you explain to them, like, no, I haven't had a field work experience here in this type of setting, so like I'm not familiar with it, but I want to learn.
I think what you just said is perfectly fine. Like, you don't want to come in and be like, yes, I am competent in this and I have so much experience when you don't. Mm-hmm. I think you can show that you have a willingness to work, you have a willingness to learn, and that you're motivated to be there and you want that position. But then also just be honest and say, I don't have a lot of experience. Do you guys have any sort of like mentorship that you can offer where you're still getting a little bit of that support and that training and mentorship from the site to kind of get you on your feet and get you like learning the ropes a little bit rather than just here's your caseload, go. And I think you have to advocate for yourself. And if you don't have the experience, you have to highlight other factors about you, whether it is motivated, a readiness to learn, like you really want to be there, and just having that kind of open and honest conversation. Some places, they're going to hear that and say, you know what, she's not the right fit for this site. We need somebody that can kind of hit the ground running. But other sites, they might say, you know what, she doesn't have the experience, but we really like her. We think she's great. If we give her a little bit of training, I think this could be a really good fit. So yeah, I think honesty is a really good thing.
Okay. Thanks for that. I'm still nervous about it, but like, yes, everyone, like we're all new grads, but like that little bit of experience does help. And to like not have that, I don't know why. If I was like a hiring manager, I think I would want to pick, you know, the person that already has the experience because it's already, you know, hectic as it is training someone new, but let alone training someone new who has never worked in this setting.
But you never know what they're looking for.
That's true.
So just because somebody has more experience doesn't mean that they're necessarily a better candidate than you are. So yeah, you never know. And from the new grad perspective, you're not going to know if you like that setting until you actually give it a shot. So even if you just take it as a learning opportunity and say, okay, I didn't get any experience in this, in this practice area in school, or very little, and then I'm going to try it out. It doesn't have to be your forever position, but go test it out, learn about it, and kind of just dip your feet in that area and see if you like it. And maybe you'll love it, and maybe you'll hate it, but you'll learn something from it, and then take that experience to the next place that you're going.
I hope it all works out.
It has to.
It will. I think, you know, this kind of just reminds me, going back to the first time that we talked, and there was this presence in the air of the fear of the unknown, going mm-hmm. into this fieldwork, not knowing what to expect. And I feel like we're in the same boat, but now we're talking about taking the boards and applying to jobs and starting a job. And it's very stressful, and it's very, can be nerve-wracking and anxiety-provoking and all that good stuff. But yet, like, you don't know yet. And I think that's the most fearful part of the entire thing. But you guys, you'll get through it. You've already made it this far. You're going to get through it. And I think for me, something that I always try to tell myself is that even when things don't go my way, I try to take something away from it and learn from it, and then be able to kind of apply that to the next time or the next experience or situation that I go through. So you might say you want to work in this practice area and there might not be any jobs and you don't end up there, but you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. Anything else that you guys can think of? I was going to wrap this up like 15 minutes ago, but that was such a beautiful conversation. I'm like, I'm going to let it go.
I think that's it for now. We're going to have one more podcast, right?
Yep. That's it.
Wow. This went by super fast.
Yeah. I honestly, like, I can't believe that we only have one more.
Yeah, I can't either.
All right, guys. Well, I don't need to take any more time. Have a good weekend. And good luck with the rest of fieldwork.
Thank you so much.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. One, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. Two, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. Three, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
It's fine. It's totally fine.
It's good. We're good. Everything's good. Great.
Yeah. What'd you do?
Me? I didn't do anything. But I did that, though.
Now it's gone. Ready?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. I am too. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'll start over.
Fingers crossed. Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, I don't even know where to go with that.
I don't have anything to say anymore.
Yeah.
Sorry, could you guys hear in the background? I tried to interrupt you. Sorry.
No, that's okay. We can tell, or at least I can see when you mute it. So I'm like, oh, like, you know, something's happening. And then you came on and I'm like, mute. Somebody's
and then I'm
there.
Like, oh, she's about to ask a question. And then I unmuted it. And then it was still noise in the background.
No worries. Okay, EJ. I know I cut you off. Do you remember what you were going to say?
Okay. Not really. I don't even remember what I was going to say. Well, I don't know how to wear this. Sorry. I think it's because my dad came down here making noise and it was like him walking was bouncing.
No. It's echoing.
And now I'm
going
to echo too. Okay, let me try to put my headphones back in.
What was I going to say? Hold on.
Hold on. Is that better?
It sounds like you're doing like somersaults. Like debrief, de-stress. Mm-hmm. I don't know. De-something.
Yeah.
Detox. Whatever it is that you need to do.
I can't even remember my first midterm. Like, I just know I've passed both. Like, I'm trying to compare the scores.
Do you guys want to hear one story and then I'll let you go?
Okay.
Okay. So, So, I graduated in May and then I was, like, done with fieldwork when I graduated. Like, everything, I was done. Beginning of May. I took my exam in August. It was, like, late August or early September. I can't remember specifically. And before, so I studied. I wouldn't say I was studying, like, 9 to 5 for May, what, 3 months or 4 months or whatever it was. But I was studying. And the week before I took my test, or the week of, because I took it on Friday. So, like, every day that week, I'm like, okay, I'm going to wake up, like, at the time I need to be up and, like, mimic what I'm doing, right? So then Thursday, the day before the test rolls around, I wake up at the same time that I'm going to wake up on Friday. I sit down and I take a practice test. And it sounds awful when I say it. This was the only practice test that I took. I didn't take any others up until this point. I had done like questions here and there. So I sat down, I started the practice test at like 8 a.m. or whenever the exam was going to start the next day, and did the practice test, and then got my results. And it said that I was highly deficient in every single area, except for one that I was only just deficient in.
Wow. Whoa.
So this was probably like 11 o'clock or something, the Thursday, a.m., the Thursday before the test. And I had a complete and utter mental breakdown because I thought I wasn't going to pass the test. And I had a friend, she was becoming a nurse practitioner. She was in school. I'm like texting her. I'm like, oh my gosh, my heart is like, I don't know what's going on. She's like, you're stressed. You're having heart palpitations. I was like crying the entire day. I was so stressed out. I sucked it up and I'm like, well, there's nothing that I can do. Like I couldn't even study that day. Like my brain was just fried. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm already signed up for the test. I got to just take it. I went and took it. Everything was fine. I ended up passing. But don't be like me. Don't do what I did.
Don't be like Sarah. No.
Take lots of practice tests and take them early. Don't do what I did. Because it's not good for your emotional stability. Yeah. So you guys can laugh at me as you're studying and taking your test and realizing the anguish that I put myself through.
I'm pretty sure we'll have our own anguish.
Seriously, I'm already knowing we're going to have breakdowns.
Yeah.
Cry.
We're already talking about breakdowns.